It was a horrible labour. The baby was in the breech position, and no one realised until too late. The 18-year-old mother had been too embarrassed to allow any of the court physicians to examine or even talk to her about her pregnancy, a prudishness learned from her own mother. The experience of childbirth would cure her of it. To make matters worse, an urgent summons to Berlin's most eminent obstetrician got lost. After 10 or 11 hours of excruciating pain, the mother cried for chloroform. She was given a handkerchief to bite on. Her screams, her husband later wrote, were horrible. The attending doctors, one German, one English, had pretty much given up on her and the baby. There were bad precedents for medics who carried out risky interventions on royal patients. When Princess Charlotte, the heir to the British throne, died in childbirth in 1817, the attending physician felt obliged to shoot himself. The child survived only because the famous obstetrician eventually received the message and arrived at the last minute. With liberal doses of chloroform and some difficulty, the doctor managed to manipulate the baby out. He emerged pale, limp, one arm around his neck, badly bruised and not breathing. The attending nurse had to rub and slap him repeatedly to make him cry. The sound, when it came, the boy's father wrote, cut through me like an electric shock. Everybody wept with relief. It was the 27th of January, 1859. At the moment of his birth, two, or arguably three, factors immediately had a defining effect on the life and character of Friedrich Victor Wilhelm Albert Hohenzollern, soon known as Willy to distinguish him, his father said, from the legion of Fritzes in the family. Firstly, the baby's left arm was damaged in the delivery, a fact which, in the relief and excitement following his birth, wasn't noticed for 3 days. It seems likely that in the obstetrician's urgency to get the baby out before he suffocated, he wrenched and irretrievably crushed the network of nerves in Willy's arm, rendering it useless and unable to grow. Secondly, and unprovably, it's possible that those first few minutes without oxygen may have caused brain damage. Willy grew up to be hyperactive and emotionally unstable. Brain damage sustained at birth was a possible cause. Thirdly, an almost impossible burden of conflicting demands and expectations came to rest upon Willy at the moment of his birth. Through his father, Friedrich, one of the ubiquitous Fritzes, he was heir to the throne of Prussia. His mother, Vicky, was the first-born child of Queen Victoria of Great Britain, and he was the British Queen's first grandchild. As heir to Prussia, the biggest and most influential power in the loose confederation of 38 duchies, kingdoms, and 4 free cities that called itself Germany, he carried his family's and country's dreams of the future. Those dreams saw Prussia as the dominant power in a unified Germany, taking its place as one of the great powers. For Queen Victoria, monarch of the richest and arguably most influential country in the world, Willy was both a doted-on grandchild, a fine, fat child with a beautiful, soft, white skin, as she put it when she finally saw him 20 months later, and the symbol and vehicle of a new political and dynastic bond between England and Prussia, a state whose future might take it in several different directions, directions in which Britain's monarch and her husband took an intense interest. 3 days after his birth, the Queen wrote delightedly to her friend and fellow grandmother, Augusta of Prussia, "Our mutual grandson binds us and our two countries even closer together." Queen Victoria felt a deep affinity with Germany. Her mother was German, and so was her husband, Albert, the younger brother of the ruling Duke of the small but influential central German Duchy of Coburg. She carried on intense correspondences with several German royals, including Fritz's mother, Augusta, and she would marry 6 of her 9 children to Germans. Although the Queen's Germanophilia was sometimes criticised in England, the British were at least less hostile to the Germans than they were to France and Russia, and occasionally even approving. At the Battle of Waterloo, Britain and Prussia had fought side by side to defeat Napoleon, And well into the 1850s, as a salute to the old alliance, there were still German regiments stationed on the south coast. Thomas Hardy described the German hussars stationed in Dorset in the 1850s as being so deeply embedded in the local culture that their language had, over the years, woven itself into the local dialect. Thou bist and er war becoming familiar locutions. Germany, or at least the northern part, was the other Protestant power in Europe. German culture was much admired. In turn, German liberals looked to Britain as the model for a future German constitutional monarchy. Its traders admired British practice, and at the other end of the political spectrum, it was to England that some of the more reactionary members of the German ruling elite, including Willy's German grandfather, had fled during the revolutions of 1848. There he and his wife Augusta had become friends, sort of the Queen and her husband Albert. Albert, the Prince Consort, an intelligent, energetic and thoughtful man, denied a formal public role in England, was even more preoccupied with Germany than his wife, particularly with its future and that of its ruling class. He had seen the German royals shocked by the revolutions of 1848, their very existence called into question by the rise of republicanism and democratic movements. He'd come to believe that Germany's future lay in unification under a modern, liberal, constitutional monarchy, like that of England. Prussia, as the largest, strongest state in Germany, was the obvious candidate.